This is the story. The amazing story of a duel that was never fought because the weapons were too dangerous. And you'll hear another story. The amusing story of how a famous woman made 100,000 francs out of a slight inconvenience. Yes, this is the story. The great statesman's face was always ruddy, but at this moment, it was a flaming scarlet. In fact, there was a hint of purple in it, and his secretary, seated across the desk from him, began to fear that his illustrious master might be suffering a stroke. For his hands, the hands that held the fateful newspaper article, shook as if with palsy, and his voice, when at last he found it, was with hoarse and fury.
Who is the man who wrote this filthy rot? Who is this Virchow that he thinks he can insult me with impunity?
Quietly, the secretary explained that Virchow, the author of the article, was of course none other than the famous Dr. Rudolf Virchow, the eminent pathologist, the esteemed authority on ethnology and anthropology. In short, one of the best-known scientists in all of Europe. Surely His Excellency had heard this gentleman was an ardent antagonist of His Excellency's political policies.
No!
Well, that was unfortunate, as well as a little surprising, for Dr. Virchow had made no secret of his disapproval, and the newspaper article which His Excellency held in his hand was only the latest of his attacks. Hearing this, the great statesman thundered,
"Not the latest, my friend, the last! I shall see to it that he never writes another such article. He has not merely attacked me, he has insulted me, and I shall answer his insult on the field of honor."
It was useless for the secretary to protest. His Excellency merely shook his head. Let two of his friends be sent for immediately. They would serve as his seconds. They would carry his challenge to this insolent Dr. Virchow. And on the morrow, the insult would be avenged. Within the hour, the two friends arrived, and learning the mission on which they were to be sent, they too raised their voices to object. For one thing, they argued, His Excellency was a soldier, while Virchow was merely a scholar. His Excellency would kill him, of course, whatever weapons he might choose. But what glory would there be in that? What honor was there in destroying a weak and helpless man who had not learned to defend himself? But still, grimly, doggedly, the great statesman shook his head. And in a voice which told them that all further argument was fruitless, he said,
"I am going to challenge him to a duel. Nothing in heaven or on earth will prevent me from meeting him on the field of honor. Now go quickly and inform him."
And so they went. It was evening now, but they found him still at work in his laboratory. The doctor himself admitted them. The soft light of dusk was on his face, and the kindliness and the gentleness that were written in his eyes made them pause for an instant on the threshold. That, and the amazing objects which he held in his hands, stared at them incredulously. What on earth, they asked themselves, would a man, even a scientist, a pathologist, be doing with two fat sausages? Dr. Virchow, seeing their bewilderment, chuckled quietly and explained,
"Oh, I am not entirely mad, gentlemen. I have been conducting an experiment with certain bacteria, the germ called trichinosis."
The statesman's seconds were still perplexed. They had never heard of trichinosis. It was, the scientist informed them,
a parasite, an insidious little creature that sometimes finds its way into the intestinal tract of man, causing illness and physical collapse, and even death.
Still smiling, Dr. Virchow waved the sausages in front of the gentleman's noses and said,
"One of these is filled with trichinosis germs. The other is free of them. It really would be too bad for anybody who happened to eat the wrong one. But enough of that, gentlemen. You do not come here to talk about parasites."
No, the gentleman admitted that was quite true. They had come, in fact, on even more serious business. It was their duty to inform the doctor that their esteemed master, His Excellency, had been deeply offended by the article which had appeared in this morning's paper. It would be his pleasure to meet the doctor in combat, at whatever time and place the doctor might see fit. The doctor bowed. He seemed neither surprised nor dismayed by the challenge.
"Frankly, gentlemen, I have been expecting this. Indeed, I have been waiting your arrival all day."
His Excellency's seconds returned his bow. "Splendid," they said. Then perhaps the doctor, exercising his right in such matters, had already chosen the weapons that would be used. And once again, the doctor bowed.
"But of course, gentlemen, these are the weapons. These two sausages. His Excellency will select one and eat it, and I shall eat the other. One of us will not survive, I promise you."
Stumbling slightly, the seconds left the laboratory and made their way back to the great statesman. And hearing the report, His Excellency turned very pale. and then very red. And finally, with a laugh that did not quite ring true, he cried...
What a sense of humor he has, eh, gentlemen? How could I fight such a man? No, I couldn't, not possibly. Not a man with such a sense of humor. Tell him so for me. Tell him I withdraw my challenge.
And so it was that the duel was canceled. And so it was, too, that the strongest man in Europe, the most powerful ruler of kings and commoners, he who waged wars by a lift of the finger and remade the map of the world, was forced to beat a retreat. For the great statesman who preferred to eat his words rather than run the risk of eating poisoned pork was none other than Germany's Iron Chancellor, the illustrious Bismarck. Yes, this is the story. The taxi pulled up before the casino. The uniformed doorman stepped to the curb, and then, of course, the crowd gathered. The young man had been warned that it would be this way. It was one of the first things she had told him when he had asked to escort her. He would have to resign himself to it, she had said, and the young man, laughing, had replied.
I shan't mind a bit. In fact, I'd rather enjoy sharing the spotlight with you. At any rate, it'll be worth it just to introduce you to Chemin de Fer.
And so now, with a beautiful and famous young woman hanging on his arm, he pushed his way through the crowd and entered the revolving door. The casino was a blaze of light, a maelstrom of excited voices. The whir of the roulette wheel filled the smoky air, the clatter of chips, the tinkle of ice in glasses, the sharp cries of the croupier. And here, no one even noticed the woman at his side. For where men gamble, the stakes are high, and even lovely faces are ignored.
Banco? Banco?
It was that voice, the voice that called Banco, which told the young man where he would find the baccarat table. The table where a game of Chemin de Fer was in progress. This was the game he had mentioned to her at the party the night before. He had seen the eager light kindle in her eyes as he described it. And it was then that he offered to show her how to play it. And now, here they stood, looking down on a large round table, where 11 men and women sat in solemn silence, while a small man with a wax mustache presided over them. And with every new deal, another one of the players would utter that familiar cry.
Bunker?
The young man turned to his distinguished date. From the look on her face, it was obvious that she was bewildered. What in the world, she demanded, did that word mean? Why was someone always saying, Banco? The young man smiled. Hadn't he explained that?
Well, that's merely the word you say if you want to play your hand. You don't have to play it. In fact, it's very unwise to play it unless you're sure that your cards are good. But if they are good, if you think you can beat the banker, then you shout, Banco, and the croupier will let you have your turn. Now, do you understand?
The young woman nodded. And then, suddenly, she turned pale and her lips grew tense and her throat moved with a strange, convulsive jerk. The young man seized her arm, murmuring,
What is it, my dear? What's the matter? Are you ill?
But she shook her head and brushed away his hand. It was nothing, she assured him. She had eaten too much, perhaps, at dinner, and all this smoke in the room and all the excitement. But it was nothing. It would pass. The young man might have questioned her further, but it was just at that moment that the croupier called out,
Seat number two is now vacant. Would the young lady like to play Chemin de Fer?
Her escort would have stopped her if he could, would have persuaded her to wait a little longer, to become a little more familiar with the game. But before he could say a word, she had slipped into the chair at the right of the banker. She was ready, she said, to play. And the young man, having no choice, took the place beside her and murmured that he would try to bring her luck. One by one, the banker dealt the cards from his little box. The young woman raised her card carefully and peeked at it. Her escort saw it, too, and breathed a sigh of relief. It was such a poor card that she would never play it. She would have a chance to watch a little longer. The banker pushed 1,000 francs out on the table. This was his bet. Would anyone meet it? And then, to the young man's chagrin and amazement, he heard a soft feminine voice cry, Banco? She was playing her card. This was impossible. She didn't understand what she was doing. She was throwing away 1,000 francs. The croupier pointed his stick at her and said,
The young lady in seat number two will play. The stakes, 1,000 francs.
And so the card was dealt. And against all odds, against all probabilities, the young lady in seat number two was declared the winner. The young man breathed another sigh, wiped his brow. Quickly, he leaned down and murmured in her ear,
Beginner's luck. You shouldn't have played that one at all. Don't call Banco until you've got a good card.
She nodded as if she understood. But her next card was no better than the first. This time, the stakes were 5,000 francs. And once more, before he could stop her, before anyone else could say a word, she cried in a harsh, strident voice, Banco! And incredible though it was, she won! Nor did it end there. Again and again, it was her voice that dominated the table. Each time she won, each time she reached out and drew her winnings toward her, until the pile of franc notes were as high as her head. And then, without pausing for breath, she would say it again, Banco! It was all the young man could do at last to drag her away from the table. He'd never seen such luck, he exclaimed. Why, she must have won 100,000 francs, but he added.
You played like an idiot, though. Why in the name of heaven did you play every hand? Why did you keep saying Banco?
And that was when she told him. She hadn't said Banco. She hadn't said it a single time. It had only sounded that way to the croupier. Actually, she had been suffering from too much dinner and too much smoke and too much excitement. And all that she had done throughout the game was hiccup. Yes, this beloved actress and singer, this famous star known on two continents as one of the greatest comedians of our day, is the only woman who ever made a fortune out of an attack of indigestion. And the story is true. She swore it was, as sure as her name was Beatrice Lilly. Yes, this is the story.